साईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्व प्रचोदयात्। शांति शांति शांति।
साई राम, डियर लिसनर्स, एंड वेलकम वंस अगेन टू रेडियो साई स्टडी सर्कल। दिस इज द सेवेंथ स्टडी सर्कल एंड वी आर रियली ग्रेटफुल टू यू फॉर द नंबर ऑफ पॉजिटिव फीडबैक वी हैव रिसीव्ड अबाउट दिस प्रोग्राम टाइम एंड अगेन। Just yesterday, there was a mail from Mr. Sriram Bandi from New Jersey who said, "Your study circles are very informative and covers very practical issues which are very much necessary to guide our minds that are in a confused state and minds that are looking for solutions. I always keep waiting for your study circles. Thank you for bringing Swami's teachings to us." Ms. Shobha Rao from Mumbai, she had sent a mail saying, "It's been a pleasure to read and listen to study circle episodes. The sublimation of desires was a new method to me, and as usual, Swami has shown me a path to move in the right direction. Thank you, Radio Sai, for bringing me closer to Swami." Another devotee, Lakshmi, referring to the previous study circle on love, said, "I am a mother of two children, and that I am only a custodian, which I learnt in the study circle, is a great lesson that Swami has given me. It was a good, simple and valuable discussion." Similarly, Dr. Lata Sri Satyakumar from the Sultanate of Oman said, "The study circle on love was systematic, structured and beautiful. Please do a discussion on surrender." So like this, we have received plenty of encouraging comments, and we sincerely thank all of you for sharing your impressions with us. Dr. Lata Sri, we will definitely do a session on surrender sometime in the near future. But today, we have something really interesting for you. And I will now ask Mr. Rangarajan, the moderator of this discussion, to take over and reveal today's theme for you. As usual, apart from me, there are three other brothers from the university participating in this discussion: Amay Deshpande, Sai Giridhar and Ganesh. So sir, please unveil today's topic for us.
"We love you, Swami."
So familiar.
Yes, we all have heard that so many times. We have said it to Bhagwan so many times. "We love you, Swami." But today what we would like to discuss is, what exactly do we mean by loving Bhagwan? Is it loving just the physical form? Is it following his message? Is it living his message? Because many times this debate comes and I say, you see, I'm doing whatever Swami wants me to do. I get up in the morning, I chant his name, I do puja, I do my worship. In the evening also I sing bhajans, and that's it. So I love Bhagwan. Now, but is this what we mean by loving Bhagwan, or is it something more than this? Because many times we find this dichotomy of people saying, "I'm doing what he's saying, what more is expected of me?" Or is it that we have literally got to live his message throughout our life? This is what I think we should be discussing today. What do we mean by "we love you, Swami"?
So I'm reminded of one very beautiful experience that happened in the Trai, Vrindavan, what we call the Trai sessions, when Bhagwan was sitting on the jhula, and as usual, Bhagwan starts in his inimitable style. "So boys, do you love me?" And there was a thunderous response to Bhagwan, saying, "Yes, Swami, we love you." But Bhagwan's response was very different. He nodded in disapproval. He said, "No, my boys don't love me. My boys only like me."
Oh.
So everybody wanted to now know, what is the difference between loving and liking Bhagwan? And then Bhagwan went on to explain this in a very beautiful way. He said, "You have a dog at home, a pet dog at home, and all along, you know, you pet the dog and you caress it and you give it a bath and you want to play with it and you feed it, etc. But do you really follow the dog in every moment of its life? Wherever the dog runs, do you run behind it? No. So can you say that you like the dog or you love the dog?" And then Swami went on to say this, something which probably hurt a lot of us. Swami said, "My boys also like me like that only.
My
just
God.
Like that dog. they want to be with me, they want to be around me, they want to see me happy, they want to feed me, etc., etc. But they don't want to follow what I say. And then Swami said, to love Swami is to follow Swami.
Hmm.
And so I think if we can rephrase today's topic as loving Swami versus liking Swami.
That's beautiful. I think it's a profound difference between the two words. Giridhar, what do you feel about it?
Sir, I think it's a profound thing which Amay has just mentioned, because Swami often used to tell our students that when you are in Swami's presence, you follow all the discipline that Swami expects you to follow. But moment you go back home, you start watching TV, going to the movies, and you know, whatnot. Somehow, this has been a trend in many of the youngsters. Probably even I was a victim to this particular trend sometime back, that we tend to conditionally or conveniently follow Swami's teachings as per our choice. Like Swami has categorically mentioned, like television is televisham. You know, it's actually poison. But what happens is, when we are here in Prashanthi Nilayam, I would not get to watch TV. I would be very happy about it. I would live a wonderful life. But as soon as I go back home, I don't know why, I would watch TV 24 hours, literally. And I think that is something which differentiates liking from loving. And loving, as Amay beautifully said, is constantly, every moment of your life, following each and everything which Bhagavan says.
Actually, so Bhagavan said it, not me.
Right. Yeah. So it's basically what you're saying, it's not just about rituals, but it's living the spirit of rituals.
Yeah.
Bishu, is that what...
Yeah,
what's
exactly.
Your
as Girdha was mentioning this, I can just think of few instances of such nature, which possibly we all have seen in our lives, wherein you will see people who are very regular for bhajans, who are very regular for Nagasankirtan, you admire them for their commitment to make time and attend these sessions. But somehow you feel that their devotion to Swami doesn't extend beyond that. You would want to see a very different personality, much more, say, a loving or a personality that Swami talks about, an ideal devotee. But everybody, they have their own vasanas, like we all have their own vasanas. But somehow we see that the devotion to Swami limits to that particular activity. It doesn't really translate into the other things that we do in our normal life.
So it's like a compartmentalized life, right? You divide your life into two parts. I now love Swami and then now...
Another very striking thing that comes to my mind is, this used to happen when Swami used to physically give darshan. You know, there are times when boys would keep a mat or a devotee would keep a mat and just to go for drinking water or something. And when you come back, suppose your mat is moved even an inch, you look at the other person as if he's a criminal. But when Swami comes to darshan, you flash your brightest smile.
Unfortunately, most of us are oblivious of the fact. We are not even aware.
I used to always feel that, you know.
But that's love for Swami.
And that person is absolutely sure, it's my love for Swami. Yeah. I want to sit in the first line. But it doesn't bother him that, you know, I just hurt that other person by looking at him in such a harsh manner.
In fact, Bishu, you'll also find people who say we love Swami and we are ready to sacrifice our personal time, family time, professional time, money and whatnot in the name of commitment to Bhagavan's mission. But they must also remember that they have to balance their roles in life. There are certain commitments that an individual may have towards his or her family and profession which should not be compromised in the name of Swami's work. In fact, Swami has often told that all work is his work.
Correct.
But yes, at times situations may definitely arise where one has to really go out of the way to meet the need of the hour. And in those times, he or she should have already developed such an understanding with the concerned individuals in their lives that they are not hurt or felt neglected. In fact, on one occasion, one boy was sharing with one of our senior faculty members of university that how his mother was a Bal Vikas guru and was so immersed in organizational activities that she had no time for her own son. She was not even giving the minimum attention that a child deserves from his mother. That is why in Swami's work, if we have not learned to balance our role and if we have compartmentalized that this work is Swami's work and that work is not Swami's work, then we have totally missed the point. All work is his work.
Yeah, I think the understanding that's emerging now is basically that liking God is something very limited. It is selfish, more out of self-interest, very narrow-minded. But loving God is something where you love him for his sake. You follow his message. It is very selfless and unlimited. But I think we need to delve on this a little more in trying to understand how we start with trying to love God But then, you know, you get overpowered with many other things and unconsciously you actually forget that you're not loving God, but you're actually harming Him. Can we have actual anecdotes and some sort of experiences which could elaborate this? Bishop, can we start with you?
Yes, sir. I am reminded of a story from the life of Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Ananda was the cousin of Buddha. And when Buddha attained enlightenment, Ananda decided to spend all his time with the Buddha. But before taking initiation, he wanted to make sure that he is not treated at par with all the other disciples. He wanted to retain his status as the elder cousin brother of Buddha. So what he did, he went to Buddha and said, "Being my younger brother, it is your duty, Buddha, to obey me. After initiation, you will become my master. And you know, I will become your disciple. And I will not be able to ask you anything or command from anything. So now, let me ask you some things before I get initiated." So Buddha says, "Fine, as you please. Go ahead, Ananda, what do you want?" So Ananda had three wishes. First, "I should always be with you. You shall never talk to anyone in secret. And you shall never send me away." This was first wish.
This copyright over God.
Yes. The second, "If I want you to meet anyone at any time of the day or night, you shall not refuse to do so."
Oh my.
That is Ananda's second wish.
So basically he wanted Buddha to stay in a cage.
And the third wish, "You and I shall sleep in the same room. I should always be with you." And he says, "Buddha, don't forget these wishes of mine. Now I'm ready."
So what do you call this, love? I don't think this is even liking.
Okay, let's listen to the complete story.
Yeah.
So Buddha says, "Fine, I'm ready. So please get initiated." So Ananda gets initiated and he becomes virtually the shadow of Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
He was always by Buddha's side. And many years later, it was time for Lord Buddha to depart. And he said, "By dusk tomorrow, I shall be gone. Call all the monks. I want to address one last time to all of you." So all the monks gathered. And there were about 1,000 enlightened monks. All of them were standing around Buddha and they were calm and composed. No one was crying, no one was in grief, except Ananda. Ananda was in deep anguish. He was crying, he was inconsolable. They didn't know what to do with him. Buddha, out of mercy, looked at Ananda and he smiled. He asked him, "Ananda, why do you cry? I have done everything that you wanted me to do. All your wishes I have fulfilled in this entire time that you have been with me." And when Buddha said this, Ananda cried even more. He said, "Buddha, now I don't know what I will do with my life. I breathe the same air that you breathe. I did everything that you did. But I have not attained enlightenment. And now I feel my life is hopeless. I don't know how to live without you." Then Buddha says, "What can I do, Ananda? I did everything that you wanted me to do. I always knew that if I fulfill these wishes, it will be a barrier for your spiritual progress. But you are not willing to forget that I was your younger brother. You wanted to retain all these privileges. Your surrender was conditional." Then Buddha says, "Perhaps my death shall make it unconditional."
Oh my God.
And then Buddha left his mortal coil. All the enlightened monks, they congregated in close proximity and, you know, it was a moment of deep introspection. They tried to collect Buddha's teachings and they're ruminating over all this. But Ananda was not in that gathering. Ananda had become a complete wreck emotionally. He spent that entire night only crying. He was helpless. He was alone. And then he realized that though he had seen everything, he had seen nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He realized that he had drunk from the fountain of nectar, but he had not tasted the nectar. He really found himself to be very alone. For the first time, he felt such a void in his life. And on that night, in that deep silence, his self-introspection began and he cried that entire night. And in that night of introspection, soon some realization dawned. You know, towards the morning, there was some deep peace that engulfed him. And he started with time realizing himself. So if you take this tale, what happened to Ananda?
Mm.
All his life, when Buddha was there,
Ananda was liking Buddha. He started loving Buddha only when Buddha left his mortal coil. If only he was loving Buddha when Buddha was there, imagine what a wealth of spiritual development that he would have gained for himself.
Very, very thoughtful. Ganesh, you would like to add
to this? Yes, as we saw that, Ananda totally missed the point. In fact, most of us, when we get into ritualistic way of life, we forget the spirit behind what we are doing.
Yeah.
Key thing is we have to know where our mind is. Means where the mind is where we are actually.
Yes.
This reminds me of a story of a Brahmin who was living right in front of prostitute's house. One day, it so happened that again, Gautam Buddha was supposed to visit the village where they were staying. The Brahmin was very confident that Buddha will bless his house first. An extremely ritualistic and pious Brahmin that he thought he was.
Mm.
But to his utter dismay, Buddha blessed the prostitute first, even before he came to Brahmin's place.
Mm-hmm.
The Brahmin's ego got hurt. He was furious. And on whom? Gautam Buddha. Mm. So when Buddha came to his house, instead of greeting Buddha with all the pleasantries, he demanded an answer as to why he had to visit the prostitute's home at all, and that too before his home. Buddha simply smiled and in the most compassionate tone he said, "The prostitute is what she is because of some inevitable circumstances of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But in spite of your noble lineage and birth, you are always curious and interested on who is coming and going from prostitute's house. What a tragedy. Your mind is not on God, but whereas she probably may have more devotion than you." So we see, we are what and where our mind dwells.
Indeed, Ganesh, what you're reiterating again is that we need to live by the spirit of the word of the master. And that is really important. In fact, I am reminded of a story. It seems there are a couple of monks who, during the period of dawn, they were walking by a river. And the river was in a state of deluge. And they wanted to cross over to go to the place where they were heading to. And suddenly they saw that there was a young woman there standing on the bank on the side that they were on. And she was calling out for help. She requested the monks to help her cross the river. So what one of the monks immediately did was he carried the woman in his arms, crossed the river, put her on the other bank, and they continued with the journey towards the destination. It was almost dusk, and the other monk, all through this journey, was looking very troubled. So this monk was wondering, why is he kind of suffering internally? So he asked him, "What's wrong with you?" So that monk replied, "What you did in the morning was not right." So he said, "What did I do?" He said, "No, how you being a celibate could touch a young lady and put her across the river?" This monk then smiled and said, "My dear brother, she was a person in need, and that's all I knew. I didn't see it any differently. I had dropped her 12 hours back across the bank. It seems to me that you are still carrying her 12 hours hence."
Yeah.
Isn't it? So it's really about living by the spirit of the master's words, which is much more important than taking the words by themselves.
And as Ganesh said, where the mind is, that's where we really are. Talking of stories, I'm reminded of a very humorous story which Bhagwan narrates. This is about a spiritual gathering. And I believe there was a master who was narrating the story of Lord Rama. And every day as he would keep narrating for hours together, slowly devotees would come and then move away. But there was one lady who would stay there right till the end of the talk. So the master was so thrilled that at least there is one devotee who is so touched by his narration. This happened for a few days, and then towards the end of the week, he observed that every day she would be the last woman sitting there. On the final day, he told her, "Mother, I'm really so happy. Forget the other devotees. At least there was one woman who was touched by
really
my narration. And that's why you're sitting here till the end." Then she looked at him in a very puzzled way. She said, "Master, what are you saying?" And he said, "No, you know, you're the only person waiting till the end of this narration." She said, no, the mat on which you're sitting actually belongs to me. I'm just waiting so that after you go, I can pick up my mat and go away." You know, it's so funny. In fact, there's a very similar story Bhagwan narrates. And I think that we should listen to directly from Bhagwan. It's a similar story about another spiritual congregation and yet another pandit and a woman. So let's listen to Bhagwan narrating this in his own voice.
Okay. A scholar singing with his melodious voice in a most enchanting, captivating, beautiful style, he started narrating the scripture Ramayana. As it is an ancient text, as he read repeatedly, as he was teaching Ramayana to people, he could not buy new Ramayana text. He stitched same old text and was making use of it. A devotee, a woman, used to sit in the front always. She sits up even before the scholar arrives. So long Ramayana discourse was going on, she wipes off her eyes. She goes on nodding her head and wipes off the tears. The reading of the text came to conclusion. The scholar got up to distribute the sacred water on his concluding day,
Purnamati.
One may come one day and they may not be able to come the following day. But this old lady never missed any talk. She is the only one who attended the Saptaha. She is a great devotee who listened to talks with all sincerity and devotion. He got her to give this sacred water, Tirtha, to her. Mother, all this Ramayana must have been imprinted on your heart. He said, sir, I don't know all about this Ramayana. I don't know what Ramayana is, I don't know what Parayana reading of
it.
The scholar asked, what is it that you have listened to over this week? She said, I
have
not listened to anything. Then why are you shedding the tears of joy? My husband died. As per the culture of Bharat, he used that waistband, the black thread. He had that black thread as waistband.
He pushed the black thread.
I see that black thread in your book. Whenever I look at that black thread, I am reminded of my husband.
He said, that's really humorous, but believe me, is this not what happens most of the time with
absolutely
us?
Absolutely. And Bhagwan has such a beautiful way of narrating the story.
It probably goes straight to your heart. The message heart. Is...
In fact, the video is very interesting. If you see Swami, the way Swami is laughing right. When you're
and I
narrating
think,
this.
I think there's a very, very powerful message that Bhagwan is sending through. Is that all along, even when we sit opposite to Bhagwan, we're so lost in his beauty. And we're so lost in the way he is, that we are not actually imbibing the message that he is giving to us. I am in fact reminded of yet another very interesting anecdote that Bhagwan used to narrate. He used to say that there was a gentleman who, gave up everything in life and went to the Himalayas and started a very rigorous penance. Mm-hmm. So that penance included, 16, 17 hours of meditation, sitting on a particular place in a particular rock and continuously doing it. And almost several months later, one day when he came to take his usual position, he saw somebody else sitting on that rock.
Mm-hmm.
And he was absolutely shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, he went up to this person and said, you know, I think you're sitting on the wrong rock. This is my rock. I've been sitting here for days together, in fact, months together and doing my penance. So that person looked at him and said, there are so many other rocks over here. You can go and sit anywhere you want and do it. Mm-hmm. And this person lost his cool. This yogi, this
so-called detached person.
Yeah, a person who gave up his family, belongings, city life, etc., went all the way to Himalayas and caught hold of a rock and got attached to the rock.
Sounds like the concept of patent has come from there.
I guess, in a sense, that is the irony that we all face when we are following. We lose ourselves into the trees and we lose sight of the entire forest.
Yeah, very true. Yes, I think what we are trying to understand is now becoming very clear that in the name of love, possibly we are actually looking for something which has a selfish motive, and we are more interested in our own happiness and joy rather than, as Swami always says, if you love somebody, we must actually make that person happy rather than looking for our own happiness. In fact, I remember a beautiful anecdote wherein once a devotee who was traveling with Bhagwan in the car. This happened recently when Bhagwan's physical frame was not keeping very well. And so this devotee thought it was a very good opportunity and he prayed to Bhagwan, Swami, please cure yourself. And Swami instantly said, why? I am fine. And we know this is what we have always heard Swami saying. Swami said, I am perfectly fine. The devotee said, no, Swami, we cannot see you like this. Please cure yourself. Then Swami said, but I am happy. And then this devotee said, no, Swami, but we are not happy because we don't feel happy looking at you like this. Then Bhagwan smiled and said, oh, so for your happiness, you want me to cure myself. You know, and then the message came so loud and clear that we are really not concerned about Bhagwan's happiness, but in the name of love, we are more concerned about, am I happy?
We are still, what's in it for me?
Yeah, it's still coming to what's in it for me. So then where is the love? So I think now it's becoming very clear that when you say, I love Bhagwan, it really means following his teachings, because that is what makes him happy. So now let's discuss about, fine, when you say following Bhagwan's teachings or loving Bhagwan is following his teachings, what do we mean by that? What do we mean by following his teachings? Fine, I'm attending bhajans, I'm doing worship. Is that not following his teachings? Can we sort of discuss on that? Amay, why don't you start?
Sir, I'm reminded of another beautiful incident that happened. It was those years, I think 98, 99, when every year Paduka Puja used to happen. And you know, this typically Paduka Puja is where you have the silver feet of Bhagwan. And every couple does puja for it. And after one of such pujas, Swami had called a few research scholars inside for an interview. And Swami was just discussing about all the things that happened. And Swami asks, so what is really Paduka Puja? And you know, one of the senior research scholars, he explained to Swami about all the things, you know, trying to explain to Bhagwan what really happened out there, explaining the various rituals. And then Swami went on to say, no, that is not Paduka Puja. Real Paduka Puja is following the steps of the master. Walking in the steps of the master is the real Paduka Puja, which I want you all to do. So in fact, I think loving Swami is about following his footsteps.
In fact, we have heard Swami saying this. He says, Aushadam and Patyam. What really it means is, Aushadam is medicine and Patyam is the diet. When a patient goes to a doctor, it's always these two things which the doctor prescribes to make the patient healthy. One is he needs to take medicine. And invariably along with the medicine goes a controlled diet. Yes. So Bhagwan says medicine is like loving Swami, but the diet is following his teachings. And he says, so if you, the patient who is suffering from this worldly disease or the ailment of the samsara, has to get healthy, he needs to A, love Bhagwan, and B, also follow his teaching. That is Aushadam plus Patyam.
Very true, very nice.
In fact, sir, in Ramayana there is a clear instance of where Lord Rama himself defines what this love truly means for God. We all know the episode where Lord Sri Rama has gone on exile to the forest and Bharata comes running in order to plead him to come back and take back the kingdom and rule the kingdom of Ayodhya. Bharata says that the king who had actually asked you to go away, my dear brother, is no longer there. Why don't you come and take back the kingdom? Lord Sri Rama had a great lesson that he wanted to impart at that moment, but he did that through King Janaka. During this whole argument which went on between Rama and Bharata, King Janaka played the role of a judge. So when the verdict was to be spelled out, King Janaka said, when there is a conflict between dharma and prema, where Bharata represents love and Rama represents dharma or right conduct, righteousness, it is always love that wins over dharma, or prema wins over dharma. Listening to this, all the Ayodhya Vasis erupted in joy, thinking that yes, this is the verdict and Lord Sri Rama is going to come back because Bharata has won his argument.
Yes.
But as usual, in his own inimitable way, Rama gives a smile to Janaka and Janaka says, but prema too has its own dharma. Even love has its own dharma. But what is the dharma of love? He says, the dharma of love is that you need to ask your beloved, your Lord, in what lies his happiness.
Wonderful.
And that implicitly follow those words of the Lord. And not impose on him what brings joy and happiness to yourself. Hearing this, we all know Bharata immediately submitted himself to Rama, having realized what true love means. And he accepted to rule the kingdom of Ayodhya on behalf of Lord Rama, because in that lied the joy and happiness of Lord Rama.
This communicates a message very clearly, is it not, Ganesh?
Really, sir. In fact, the subtle and right understanding of such concepts is very important even before we take the first step in the spirituality. And talking of the first step, it is said that the essence of all the knowledge and right understanding of scriptural text is practice. Until and unless we have made a sincere and systematic attempt to put into practice what we have learned, we will be like people who enjoy the food in recipe books and not on the plate. A classic example that comes to my mind is an instance from Swami Rama's life. When he was giving some spiritual lessons to a small group of very ardent followers who were sincerely taking notes, and I'm sure some of you may be taking notes even now as the study circle is going on, the point that I want to make comes now. A very unassuming man came and sat with this group of sincere students. He seemed to have a carefree attitude and was definitely not taking any notes. As can be expected from any teacher, Swami Rama accosted this man for not being serious about the lessons, to which the man replied bluntly, "What you are teaching is sheerly bookish knowledge. It must be practical knowledge born out of conviction, springing out of direct practice and experience." Swami Rama was obviously taken aback, and he demanded him to show his so-called practical knowledge. Just then, the man saw an ant trying to scramble past him. He took the ant in his hand, broke the body of the ant into three parts, kept them separately at a reasonable distance, closed his both eyes, and within few moments, the three parts of the body joined back to each other and the ant came back to life, immediately scrambling away. Now, needless to say, all were stunned by this feat. And Swami Rama asked this man with all the reverence as to where he had learned this art. Pat came the reply, "From your guru." Mm-hmm. Till then, Swami Rama had thought that he was his guru's favorite disciple. But how is it that his guru had taught a stranger a feat of literally mastering death? He got furious and went running straight to his guru, demanding an explanation for keeping such an art secret from him. The guru calmly replied, "He practices whatever I have taught him. If you practice, then all the good things will be bestowed upon you." At this juncture, I must immediately clarify that the purpose of narrating Swami Rama's episode in our current discussion is not to glorify the power of occultism or siddhis that a seeker may acquire during certain spiritual practices, which in fact can be a source of distraction on the ultimate goal of self-realization. The point I want to drive here through this episode is, 1 ounce of practice is worth more than tons and tons of bookish knowledge.
Absolutely. In fact, Ganesh, there's a beautiful narration by a great spiritual master called Nisargadatta Maharaj in his book called I Am That. In fact, the book is a compilation of various conversations that devotees had with him. And I would like to quote verbatim from the book itself, exactly what precisely you are talking about, that is putting into practice sincerely
teachings,
the teachings and the words of the master, what reward it can give you. The questioner asks Nisargadatta Maharaj, "How does one come to know of the truth as you have done?" And I now quote what Nisargadatta Maharaj had to say. "I can only tell you what I know from my own experience. when I met my guru, he told me, "You are not what you take yourself to be. Find out what you are. Watch the sense I am. Find your real self." I obeyed him because I trusted him. I did as he told me. All my spare time, I would spend looking at myself in silence. And what a difference it made. And how soon. It took me only 3 years to realize my true nature. My guru died soon after I met him, but it made no difference. I remembered what he told me and persevered. The fruit of it is here with me. Unquote.
It's beautiful.
Wonderful, Giridhar. That is really profound. I am reminded of another great personality from whom we can learn how to practice the teachings of the Guru.
Mm-hmm.
It is King Janaka. In a forest near Mithila, Sri Sukha had come and he was teaching Atma Tattva to disciples. When King Janaka came to know of that, he went to King Sukha and he prayed that he be accepted as one of the disciples. And Sri Sukha, he readily agreed. And every day at a particular time, the session used to start and Janaka used to come from the kingdom. He was a king, so he used to attend to his duties but be on time for the session. One day, the Sri Sukha came early for the class and the other disciples were there. Janaka had not yet come. And the sage was waiting for Janaka to arrive to start the class. And this was not something which was liked by all the disciples. They felt, how could Sage Sukha do this? He is such an enlightened sage, how could he be partial to King Janaka? Just because he is a king, he has wealth, he has power, what about us? Finally, of course, after a few minutes, Janaka came and Sage Sukha started the class. And Sukha knew what was going on in the minds of the disciples. And soon what he did, through his mystic powers, he created a situation where all the disciples saw that the whole city of Mithila was in fire. So the moment they saw this, all the disciples, they just ran helter-skelter from the class because they wanted to protect their belongings, their house, their clothes, whatever. Only person who did not move was King Janaka. He was just motionless. In fact, Sri Sukha told Janaka that your palace is on fire. That didn't bother him. And soon all the disciples returned and they reported that everything is fine in the city, nothing is burning. Then Sri Sukha explained how each one of them ran to protect a small house of theirs while King Janaka, who had a palace, was totally unaffected. And then he went on to explain how Janaka's love for the Guru was the maximum because his attention on his teachings was the maximum. And that's how he also had the maximum of Guru's love.
In fact, I'm reminded of one of our brothers who used to push Bhagavan's chair. He was on duty a few years back. It so happened that he had an opportunity to ask Swami, amongst the various relationships that Swami talks about in his discourses, which is the best relationship that we can have with you? And apparently at that moment Swami did not answer. But later, as he was taking Bhagavan's chair out, Swami just turned back and said, "The best relationship that you can have with me is Guru Shishyas, that is, a master and a disciple." And then Swami went on to say, the reason for it being that in every other kind of relationship that we can have, there is some amount of selfishness or there is some amount of conditionality. Whereas between that of a master and a disciple, there is absolutely no conditions attached. The master simply loves the disciple out of the feeling that his disciple should progress. And the disciple in turn loves the master because he has to follow the master.
Wonderful. I think now it's clear that when we say, Bhagwan, we love you, it means we must follow his teachings. But as we have seen in the example of either Swami Rama or King Janaka or what you talk, Giridhar, about Nisargadatta Maharaj, in all these cases, the important thing is that practice of these teachings led to their individual transformation. So I think now we must move to the next level wherein we say, yes, Bhagwan, we will follow your teachings, but not just in letter, but in spirit, so that it brings about a change in us. Because otherwise, just saying following your teaching, again would become like, I love you, Swami. In fact, I remember on one occasion when Sri Indulal Shah, who was heading the Global Satya Sai Seva organization, when he made a trip overseas, he had asked Bhagwan, can you give me some message which you can communicate to all the devotees over there? It was a Satya Sai service meet. And Bhagwan gave a beautiful statement. He said, tell them what service they do is not as important as what that service does to them.
Wow.
In the sense, is the service changing me? Is it transforming me? Am I becoming less short-tempered? Am I becoming more compassionate? If all this is not happening, Bhagwan says, what's the use of the service you're doing? So can we now move on to the next level wherein we say, how can these teachings lead to personal transformation? Bishu, can you give some examples of devotees where following Bhagwan's teachings has actually led to a personal transformation?
Sir, I would like to share something which is not an example of a devotee who had this transformation, okay, but how Swami emphasized this to a very dear devotee.
Mm-hmm.
It is an interaction that Mrs. Rani Subramanyam, whom lovingly everyone calls Rani Ma, had with Swami some time ago. She is one who had a very deep spiritual quest, and Swami also gave her a lot of opportunities to her as well as to their family and guiding them on the spiritual path. And it was a time when they were getting a lot of chances, interviews and interactions. And one day her daughter asked Swami, Swami, you have been so good to our family. Now, how do we keep this grace? Are we going to get these chances continuously? She wanted to ensure that, you know, this never stops. Then Swami says, you are getting all these chances not because you are coming to Puttaparthi or you are having my darshan. The only way you can ensure that you get complete grace, paripurna krupa, is only when you hold on to my teachings. And then Swami says, I am not important. What is important is my teachings.
My.
And he says, if you can get inspiration from coming to Puttaparthi, then you come. But if you come to Puttaparthi and you are disturbed, if you are not able to progress, then you need not come to Puttaparthi. But what is important is you follow my teachings. Coming to Puttaparthi is not all that important.
This coming from Bhagwan himself. It's so amazing. Amai, what about you? Do you have any such anecdotes?
Sir, I am in fact reminded of one occasion when in 2005 when we were in Kodaikanal and Swami was asking us to go for bhajans in the evening. So typically after the tea session in the afternoon, we would have a session with Bhagwan. At the end of it, he would say, you know, all of you go for bhajans. And in that session, as he was asking us to go for bhajans, so he asked, so everybody likes bhajans? So we all said, yes, Swami. So then Swami kind of, you know, made a joke saying that so much devotion, no, so much devotion you all have. And as Swami got up, he said, I don't want your devotion. I want transformation. And the way I understood it, it was like devotion can come on a Thursday or on a Sunday evening. I mean, or when we go to Kulwant Hall every day from 6 to...
Or you go to the church on a Sunday morning.
Exactly. You know, we step into Kulwant Hall, we are at a high in devotion, we shed a tear or two for God, and the moment we step out, we are back to our old selves.
Mm-hmm.
No. In fact, Swami said, devotion vastundi potundi. Devotion can come and go, but transformation, once it comes, it stays with you. So in fact, the gift of devotion should be transformation.
Fantastic.
So on the same lines, I remember one of the senior brothers sharing that once he was going along with Swami, had an opportunity to walk with Swami, and that time one of the devotees shouted, I love you, Swami. And instantly Swami replied, don't love me, love my teaching.
In fact, Swami always used to emphasize on transformation, and that is something which was very dear to him. And I remember a beautiful episode which happened in the year 1999. A group of MBA students were seated in the front rows in Mandir, and as Swami came for darshan, they all shouted out to Swami saying, Swami, interview Swami, please Swami, interview Swami. And Swami, you know, loves to crack jokes with boys. So he said, get your wives, I'll give you interview. So everybody laughed out loud, but they thought Swami was just joking. So they continued to say, Swami, we love you, Swami, please give us interview, Swami, and all that. Then Swami just turned and he was very serious at that point of time. He said, hey, your mind is your wife. Your atma or your soul is the husband. If your mind and the husband, that is, if the mind and the atma are in perfect state of understanding, there is peace and harmony at home. But if the mind and atma have diverse opinions or they think differently, the result, Swami said, he puns with the word, he says, the result would be diverse and that will lead to a catastrophe.
Divorce.
Divorce. You know, so Swami insisted, when I say, get your wife, I'll give you interview, what I mean is, I am your soul. Let your mind ever be on me. Then you will automatically have that inner view.
Inner view.
Which is the most important step to transformation.
Beautiful.
In fact, talking of devotion transmuting into transformation, Swami is told that the river of devotion should flow between the banks of duty and discipline. Even devotion should be regulated in the discipline channel, and this calls for training the mind into applying brakes. In the modern times, we all have become inflicted with an addiction of speed.
Yes.
We want everything to move fast, what we can also call instant gratification. That is why when the young generation, who are always bubbling with energy, enthusiasm and passion, when they're reminded, be careful, be more self-controlled, they get restless. Self-control is synonymous to applying brake. It may seem to be contradicting the freedom, the intense speed with which one wants to achieve his ambitions, but it is this self-control that stops the individual to take the shortcuts, which are more often than not the wrong cuts of the life. I'm sure Brother Sai Giridhar will agree with me, out of his immense experience in bike stunts and four-wheeler stunts, that the better the brake of the bike is, more confident you'll feel as a driver.
Not just that, Ganesh, you need to know what is the right time to apply them.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we must train our mind to apply the brakes when and where required to avoid the accidents. You have to strike a balance between the accelerator and the brake. This is the spirit behind the word self-control, which ultimately leads to transformation.
Then our devotion can really transmute into transformation.
I think it's now getting obvious that what is most dear to God is you follow His teachings, and that teaching has to lead to transformation. I'm reminded of a very nice anecdote. This happened during our student days. Bhagwan would put us through these ups and downs, which, you know, the students are typically aware of. And it was one of those periods when Bhagwan was very unhappy with the students, and we waited for days and Swami was never talking to us. So then came a point, a breakdown point. We said, Bhagwan, we have to now, you know, plead with you, mercy. So we all sort of got together as a team. And when Bhagwan came out for darshan, we rushed to him, held on to him, and we said, Swami, please forgive us, please forgive us. But Bhagwan was very strict. This was our devotion, but he reminded us, discipline. He said, all are watching, don't do this. So then, you know, slowly that please forgive us became please Swami, that's how, and nobody would understand what it is. It would just end up with please Swami. And then how beautifully, it was our devotion, he reminded us of discipline, and next he reminded us of a duty. So beautifully Swami punned on it. He said, what are you saying? Please Swami. He said, you please Swami, then automatically I will talk to you. So beautiful, you know, you please Swami, and you please Swami. How do we please Swami? By following his teaching. So in such a wonderful way, Bhagwan would communicate this. I mean, why we remember this is, it makes such a deep impact on our minds. One sentence from Bhagwan, but it says it all. I think we should not conclude this discussion without mentioning one more point. Typically people feel, the moment you say follow Bhagwan's teachings, they say, oh, come on now, I love Swami, that's enough. And because generally the feeling is, when you have to follow his teachings, it's very tough. We remember the great saints and sages who had to walk the bed of thorns, and they cried all the time, they were pining. So somehow there's a feeling that it's a very tough path. But, you know, I love Swami is a very easy path. I think we should remove this myth. I'm reminded of Mother Teresa's episode, where we know she was known for catering to and serving the aged people and the lepers who were almost on their deathbed. This was one of those times when she was treating a person who had fallen into a drain, and there were a lot of maggots on his body. Mm. It was stinking, and here a person came, her biographer, who saw this and he said, Mother, how could you be doing this? It's so stinking. I wouldn't do this for $1 billion. And immediately she replied, she said, I'm also not doing it for $1 billion. I'm doing it for God. I'm doing it for Jesus. In the sense, her experience was very pleasant, but the onlooker's experience was, oh, how could you be doing this? So many a time, I think we should not make judgments saying it is very tough, it is very difficult, because ask the person, is it really tough?
Yes.
I mean, let's discuss a little bit about this before we wind up the discussion.
In fact, on one occasion,
yes,
Bhagwan was asked by one earnest devotee as to why some of his dearest devotees like Mirabai and Sakubai, they had to go through so much of suffering and travail. And it appears that the spiritual path is full of strain and tribulations. Pat came Swami's reply. Mm-hmm. Did Sakubai or Mirabai come and tell you that they were suffering?
did he say that? Wow, that's amazing.
That is your perception.
Okay.
And truly, it is a real misconception that the spiritual path is full of trials and tribulation. But if you go and actually ask the devotee who is going through the test, he or she will be absolutely oblivious of all the suffering because his focus is on the God, on the beloved.
I think Pandavas also never complained. You know, it's only we who feel, oh, Pandavas went through so much of suffering.
Yes. Yeah. That's why the saying goes, beauty lies in the eye of beholder. But the actual experience is known only to the person who is going through that situation of life. Mm-hmm. Hence, we must not be judgmental about others' behavior because it may be our figment of imagination.
So true. In fact, as I was listening to Rangarajan sir and Ganesh, I think we all can relate to this in one manner. You know, when I decided to stay back in Prashanthi Nilayam, a lot of my classmates and friends, they always felt, oh my God, you have done such a big sacrifice. Okay. But frankly, I have never felt like that. In fact, I used to feel the opposite. I feel they are sacrificing so much of joy and happiness that I get staying in Prashanthi Nilayam, because here you get to do God's work and also you enjoy all the good things of life. And if you want anything, anytime, Swami provides it. So the concept that, you know, following Swami's teachings means your life will become a very strict and disciplined life, completely boring with no fun, no color. I think these are all our figments of imagination.
Absolutely. It's a very joyful experience.
It's actually a joyful experience because things happen so beautifully in your life.
Though it may have ups and downs, there's no doubt about it, but it's a very joyful experience.
And in fact, as Ganesh was mentioning about saints, I'm reminded of the story of Father Damien. Father Damien, if you know, he was sent to the Hawaiian settlement in Molokai. It was a small island where lepers were quarantined off to. And the bishop of Hawaiian kingdom wanted to send a priest to that settlement. And Father Damien volunteered to go there. And he was sent there for a few months with instructions that he should not go too close to the deceased. But Father Damien, given what he was, he mingled with them because he wanted to serve them. He wanted to build houses for them, a school, he nursed them and etc. etc. And so what happened was, he ended up sick. But one prayer that he always did to Jesus is this: Lord, you gave your life for all mankind. How can I call myself a follower of Christ if I am not willing to give myself away in service? That was statement. Father Damien. And yes, he succumbed to that disease, but he had no regrets. He had a great life. He enjoyed every moment of being there for the other person.
In fact, sir, I think we have discussed many instances of what has been the experience of somebody who has experimented to love God, if I may say so. But I think the fundamental issue is, as we started off with, you know, many people ask this question, oh, it's a very difficult thing to do. How do I go about following God's words and all that? We had a wonderful experience when some of us had made a trip to Rishikesh, Vasishta Gufa, the cave of sage Vasishta, where Swami himself had visited in the year 1961. We met a Swamiji there by name Swami Shantananda, and he was speaking to us, and he was talking to us about sadhana, about practicing the teachings which Bhagwan has taught us. And one of us suddenly said, but Swamiji, it's so difficult to put it into practice. And he immediately pounced on us saying, see, this is the fundamental problem. You put a barrier right in front of you yourself.
Mental block.
A mental block before anybody else, any other barrier comes in front of you, you know, due to life situations and all that. The first fundamental barrier is something which we put in front of our own selves. And he said, unless you remove this barrier, how will you ever experience the sweetness or joy of following God's words? He said, try for a week, for a month, for a year, and you will experience the joy of it. And that experience is what will take you ahead. So it's a step-by-step process. We need to have the perseverance to try or experiment loving God in this way.
Yes, I think this step-by-step process is something that is so convenient in our spiritual growth. Most of us think that it's a quantum leap. That is, today I am like this, from tomorrow I am expected to be like that.
Overnight miracle.
Overnight miracle.
I can't do this.
Yes, and that's what gives us this mental block that, oh God, this is going to be so difficult. In fact, I am reminded of a beautiful prayer that I had read somewhere, which goes something like this. Oh Lord, forgive me for I am not what I ought to be, but thank you Lord, for I am not what I used to be.
Oh, wonderful. That's really
that
nice.
Is, every day I am taking that one little step. Swami, I am not what I used to be. But I know, Swami, I am not yet what I ought to be.
That takes care that we are not complacent.
Yes, so I think it's a step-by-step process. that just like Shabari, who took the pains of going through that whole process day in, day out, eventually one day the Lord came. Like that, our spiritual progress can be a day-to-day process.
Yeah, I guess all of us have been through this. So, Amay, why don't you share one of your personal experiences to really illustrate how this happens?
In fact, for me, following Bhagavan's teachings has been an extremely, I should say, a joyous experience. It started off with a lot of pain. You know, so I used to think that, oh God, when Swami says love all, serve all, it's like the most difficult thing to do, because how can you love all and how can you therefore serve all? So I took it up as a challenge that, Swami, all in your lifetime, you always radiated love. Probably, you know, anybody who came to Bhagavan, his smile was so bewitching, okay, that it mesmerized all of us and we would forget all our problems. Swami, can I also lead a life like that? So this is one message of Bhagavan that I tried to implement in my own life. And I found it is so beautiful. The other day, I would like to just narrate this experience.
Yeah, sure.
I was traveling in the train and we have all sorts of people coming, you know, begging for a lot of things. And it kind of many times turns us off because there are so many people coming and probably some of them don't even deserve that. So there was this person who came up to me and, you know, started pestering me to give something to him. And I did not want to because I did not have, very frankly, I did not have enough in my pockets to give him. And there was this burning anger that was now beginning to come inside me. And that's when I suddenly thought that, okay, this is a time when I can start practicing Bhagavan's teachings. That is, radiate my love towards that person who's asking me because I don't know the circumstance. And so all of a sudden what I did was I looked at this person and gave him a beautiful smile. Okay, and I told him that, no, I am not going to give you. Fully knowing in my heart at that moment that, Swami, may your love pour forth from me to this person. And it was a miracle of sorts because even that person looked at me, he smiled at me, and he just walked away. And I have had several such experiences when it has come to, you know, radiating love.
Classic example is of Phyllis Crystal transforming the hijackers. Yeah. We'll not go into that, but I think that is a really classic example of that.
In fact, sir, I have a very, very trivial experience, but nevertheless, which had an impact on my life physically. I was suffering from a disease called migraine, which is a one-sided headache, for more than a decade. And I tried all kinds of medications for the first 4 or 5 years. Nothing seemed to help me. So I even prayed to Bhagavan once saying, Swami, there is this kind of a headache which keeps coming, Swami. What should I do? And Swami said, Cheptano, Cheptano, I'll tell you, I'll tell you. And years passed by and Swami had taken us to Chennai where he had advised us that coffee and tea are very bad for health. So he said, you have to stop coffee and tea.
Hey, that's tough.
In fact, this is precisely what the thought which was going through our minds. And it was even more tougher for me because every time I had a headache, it was natural for me to run for a cup of coffee or tea. And now Swami is asking me to stop coffee and tea. Of course, he never forces anything on us. He was advising that it is good for us if we do so. And believe me or not, brothers, I stopped coffee and tea because Swami said so. And after that, I never had a single episode of migraine until today. It's 5 years since then.
Wow. Oh. Amazing.
I mean, I cannot correlate stopping coffee or tea with migraine.
That was a cure for
it. But nevertheless, I never took any medication. But this is how it happened. I stopped coffee and tea. And my migraine stopped too. So probably practicing Swami's teachings or his words has much more profound effect on us than we can even comprehend.
I want to add to what Amay was saying about radiating love. You know, this is what I have also experienced in my life. Whenever I do not have a cordial relationship with someone and I feel, you know, it cannot be solved with just a frank chat, I need to do something more. Then what I do is when I sit down for prayers the next morning, I envelope this person with my love. Mm-hmm. And I do it really sincerely and wholeheartedly. And I'll tell you, this has worked. It may not work, you do it once, but you do it for 2-3 days, 4-5 days continuously.
How does it work? What happens?
Suddenly you will see that there is a warmth in that relationship. Mm-hmm. Earlier when you meet that person and there is so much of negative energy, but slowly that transforms to positive energy. And then you start talking. You know, things become normal.
In fact, I vouch what Vishu is saying because I had a similar experience. There was one brother of mine, we stayed in the same room, but somehow I had kind of developed an aversion to him because of difference of opinion basically. But then there was this very strong feeling in me that, you know, Swami says love all. I cannot afford to hate anybody in this world.
So I, with all my heart, I prayed to Swami, Swami, show me some way that I'll start loving even him. You know, through one of his discourses, Swami had given this methodology of doing it. He says, if you cannot come face to face with a person whom you don't like, when you're away from them, sit and pray for them from the bottom of your heart. Pray for them that they be very happy in their life. Pray for them that they follow Swami's teachings and they grow very near and dear to Bhagwan. Such selfless prayer, I have found by practical experience that today when both of us meet, we look into each other's eyes, we are very, very comfortable with each other and we exchange pleasantries, and there's a perfectly harmonious and loving relationship between the two of us. And it is merely the miracle of prayer that has done this.
That's lovely, beautiful experiences. So basically this whole process of following his teachings becomes very enjoyable when you do it with the right spirit. And in a way, every moment becomes a miracle. As Bishu, you said, you know, your whole relationship changes because of this particular experience. In
fact, you start beginning to notice all the small, small miracles that begin to happen in our lives.
Then it's no more, it's no more manifestation of vibhuti or manifestation of nectar, which are miracles in their own way. But what becomes more important are the subtle miracles, the timing, the circumstance, somebody just coming to you, telling you a word which changes your life. In fact, I would just like to quote one very beautiful anecdote. This is about a student who studied from the primary school. And he says when he was in the primary school, he's now in the institute, that one day he lost his socks. Maybe it was a sports day and he left his shoes outside, lost his socks. He was feeling so bad about it. And then he went and told his teacher, "Madam, I've lost my socks." And you know, he thought he'll get a very nice pat and she'll feel sorry for him. But she in fact scolded him and chided him, "Can't you even take care of your socks?" So this put him off so much that in the evening when he went to the mandir, he had a very, you know, dull look on his face. He felt very bad. And then he says, you know, something unimaginable happened. Bhagwan came out of the interview room and out came a huge basket. And he came straight to the primary school students and he was going to distribute something to them. Guess what?
Socks.
There were socks. Now, wow. He said, come on, this cannot be a coincidence. Even the young lad knew.
Pleasant shock.
And all of them, you know, the madam distributed socks to all of them. He was extremely happy, but this was not the master stroke. Mm-hmm. The master stroke was, Bhagwan then picked up a few socks, asking every student, did you get? He came close to this boy. And without asking him, he threw one more pair of socks at the boy.
Wow.
And this student says this one event of Bhagwan's omnipresence and omniscience changed his life completely forever. He never needed any further proof of, you know, God's presence in a life, which makes our entire journey a miracle every minute and every second. It's not about one day or a particular event.
Life becomes so meaningful with that.
Very meaningful and enjoyable too. Enjoyable. So basically what we have done today is we have started with the whole theme of loving Bhagwan. And as we have understood, when you say we love Swami, it's not about liking, as Amay said, but it's about truly loving. And true loving means following his teachings. Again, following his teachings should not be just limited to following his teachings on paper, but it should lead to individual transformation. And ultimately, this whole process is not a very difficult, stressful, you know, but it's a very enjoyable process which makes every second of a life memorable and enjoyable. I guess with this,
let us all hope and pray that we truly love Bhagwan the way He wants us to.
And please Him.
Please Him. Yes. I think that was wonderful. Let us end the session with a prayer like we do in every study circle.
Om Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Om